Kevin, there's lots of interesting storylines going on right now in the NBA. The interesting one for me, though, is as it gets closer to the trade deadline, who do you see as players that are going to be on the move?
It's interesting because you're always measuring, okay, who is expendable? And usually what we're talking about are good players on teams that are rebuilding, right? I mean, so you've got your Tristan Thompson and your Kevin Loves, right? Like, you know, is Bradley Beal in for the long haul if the Washington Wizards are bowled over by an offer? Chris Paul in Oklahoma City. So that's sort of what you look at. But then you also look at the weight of the contract and, you know, what can teams absorb? And because you're, you know, if someone famously said, you're not trading players, you're trading contracts in many respects. And the salary cap makes that even more imperative, right? You can't just, you know, fire it up like it's your fantasy league. So, you know, I think watching those Cavs players, I mean, that is a team that is so clearly in rebuild mode. And, you know, Kevin Love, for, you know, warts and all, is a big man who can rebound and shoot threes. And that is still a skill that is more than ever at a premium in this league. I think Chris Paul is going to be interesting to watch in that clearly Oklahoma City is stocked at that position and are moving toward the future, and he has such an expensive contract. But, you know, the funny thing about the Miami Heat, who were the natural trading partner for them a couple of months ago, is they're playing great. Like, the last thing you might want to do is introduce an unknown variable, and while Chris Paul is still, you know, a future Hall of Famer, you know, I don't know, you want to screw with the vibe in Miami. So it'll be interesting to watch. Gallinari is another guy on Oklahoma City. Again, a veteran who came over in the Paul George deal, who's on the final year of his deal, and look, if Oklahoma City can get anything for him whatsoever, I think they would be out to move.
You kind of went through the team, the players that could be on the move. Which teams do you think need a piece to maybe to push themselves into playoff contention or push themselves, you know, into maybe a team that could go deeper in the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I would say that Philadelphia, I think, will be more active in the buyout market. I just think that they're going to, and they've been successful in previous years, that first Cinderella year when they got Marco Bellinelli and Ersan Ilyasova. They need shooting. And I think that is the team in the league that is most aware of its deficiencies and also aware of the magnitude of those deficiencies. I mean, they know they probably can't achieve what they want to achieve with that spacing. It's just not working on the offensive end of the ball. I mean, I think they're a great defensive team. I still think they're good enough to finish second or third in the East. But they have a need that is glaring. And the thing is, again, trade market is hard. It's why in recent years you've seen so many of these guys get picked off a buyout market, because it's just an easier fit in terms of the money. It's just really hard to make a trade in the NBA.
Oh, extremely difficult. Now, it seems that maybe it might become difficult to sign free agent players. I don't know if you read the article, we're talking about all of the strange requests. You know, Sam Amerika had just written this story about all the odd requests coming out of Kawhi Leonard's camp. You know, allegedly it left the Lakers fuming. What do you make of all these stories, Kevin? And is there anything the league can do?
You know, I think obviously the league can enforce the collective bargaining agreement, which outlaws strange or really unusual requests that have material value that exist outside the structure of the salary cap. You know, it's a tough one in so far as, I mean, look, there have been urban legends around the league for years that Lord knows what this owner is doing for this player after his career is over and handshake agreements and whatnot. None of them are substantiated, though I imagine more than zero are true. It's a very difficult league to enforce. But I think what they're going to have to do is, I think, the free agency prospect is going to have to be more transparent. And I think that's just going to have to be an imperative where you just can't, you know, you can't circumvent this. You can't, you know, the league only works if on a contract basis, right? There's an understanding that there are 30 teams. The playing field is never going to be level from an imagination standpoint, right? Like going to LA will never be the same as going to Memphis. But this we can enforce, right? Like this is something where material benefits that exist outside the collective bargaining agreement just aren't kosher, and we can't have it.
When you look at the season up to this point, what's the biggest surprise story for you in the NBA season?
The Raptors and the Heat. I think, and I mean, obviously the injuries that the Raptors are enduring right now are going to test them, though. They've won several in a row all of a sudden. But those two teams, I think, being in the elite, and I think that I would throw Dallas in there as sort of another mystery guest that I didn't have as strong, and obviously we'll see what they can do with Doncic out for a while. That would be one story. And the other one is even though they've lost three in a row and LeBron didn't play last night, sort of the ease with which the Lakers have glided through the season. I mean, especially being in Los Angeles, you're always acutely aware that it's going to be a zoo, right? There will be internecine rivalries in the front office. LeBron will be unhappy about this. This guy's going to act out. And is Frank Vogel going to be on the hot seat the minute he arrives? And it has been, even with the current losing streak, it has been relatively calm. Like, they are good on both sides of the ball. I guess that shouldn't be a surprise when you have the talent they have and LeBron and Anthony Davis and some other nice parts. But it has been smooth sailing. When you're around the Lakers, it is just drama-free. It just seems workaday and completely tranquil. And I think that is a surprise. It is not what we ever expect from the Lakers. Win or lose, it is always a story, and it just hasn't been one.
We got Kevin Arnovitz on the line, ESPN NBA writer, big guest of the day, breaking down the world of the NBA. Continuing reports come surfacing about the NBA want to maybe shave off a few games and then create a mid-season tournament. Your thoughts on this idea the NBA might float out to the NBAPA?
Mm-hmm. How much time do we have?
We got a lot.
Yeah, well, for this one, I think it's a big deal.
So it is a big deal, and look, I think the tournament's a fine idea, and I think they can incentivize it to the point where it will be competitive. There's a larger problem here, and it's a problem that's affecting industries everywhere, which is, and it's what I've been calling the Irishman problem. I don't know, did Netflix release, you know, the Scorsese movie up in Canada?
Oh, yeah, we got it up here.
All right, yeah, okay. So this is what we're all contending with, right? Which is, you and I all grew up in a world where after dinner I did my chores and I sat down at the den with my homework, and I put on a game. And I didn't have a lot of choice in whatever game it was. You know, hopefully it was I grew up in Atlanta, so I was up in the Hawks, the Braves had a game or whatever. But, like, if it wasn't that, I'd watch some college basketball. You know, maybe I'd watch something else, whatever it was on. And we were a captive audience of fans. That is no longer the world we live in. I think there are people under 30 who do not even have cable or satellite, right? They have their Apple TV or whatever it is they have, stream whatever they have. And the NBA has a problem, which is it has a very uncompelling regular season product. And people aren't showing up at the arenas, and they're not turning on their television sets. And it's going to get worse, because this year it was the Irishman and like a couple of other little ones. In the future, you're going to come home and you're going to have a million choices. And I'm sorry, but Nets Magic on a Tuesday night is not a compelling product. Nobody cares, least of all the players. It's why they rest. Everybody knows the regular season is too long, too many games, and they're going to have to create some scarcity. And so I think one of the things the tournament services to do is, well, if we ultimately go down to 68 or 64 games or whatever it is, and there are forces in the NBA that would like to do this, and I would agree with them, we try to create that scarcity. Well, how the hell do we make up the revenue? The answer is, oh, we sell a tournament globally. We create television products, a play-in tournament for those final two seeds. It's why you hear about these products in conjunction with shortening the season, right? Because if we're going to take away inventory, we need to make it up somehow. Because I think that's the thing that the league is dealing with. I don't think it's that the league wants a tournament. I think the league is going to need things they can sell to make up and offset the losses from future thing. But the moving down to 78 is sort of, I think, a trial balloon. And I think if those in the league who I think are rightly concerned about the scarcity issue, there's just too much. You need appointment events to draw anything. That's why the Irishman is a big deal, right? It's an appointment event. That's why people love Game of Thrones. It was like there are only six or eight of these episodes. You wait all year for them, and wow, you come, and that's what it is. That is the only way you can make hay. And I think that's what the NBA is dealing with. So I think the tournament is a way to do that, and I think it could be compelling. I mean, leagues all over the world do these things. I mean, it actually, North America is quite rare in its not having cups and little side tournaments. I mean, that's kind of a rare North American thing. And I think, but can it be compelling enough so they can generate the revenue so that when they do want to reduce the season, which I think they need to do, it's both for health reasons and, again, for attention reasons. Like nobody cares about these, right? The NBA does not need to be playing four times a week. No NBA team needs to be playing four times a week in today's culture.
Well, that leads me to one quick one here is I've always argued that less can be more for teams. And if the NBA, and maybe they work in conjunction with the NHL, because, you know, they're a lot of them are in, some of them share buildings, not a lot, but some do, where you would just have designated days. 3 days a week is when games were going to be played, and those were it. So we talk about destination. You look at the NFL, it was always Sundays and then Monday night. Right now they've added Thursdays, and even them, some of the NFL people say, well, that's maybe hurting us because now it gives them another option. But if you looked at the NBA and the NHL, and I've long argued, if they just played out of 3 or 4 days a week and that's it, those are the only, so there was dark nights all the time, so fans could kind of have a break. Okay, I'm planning to do this, this, and this, but these are the nights I want to watch. Has that ever been discussed? Do you think it's ever possible?
Well, I think it's possible in this sense. So when you talk to people around the league who are on the business side, one of the things they tell you is how much revenue they lose on Mondays and Tuesday nights at the gate. Like, it's school, it's the beginning of the week, people aren't drinking as much at the arena, they're not kind of doing the food and dinner and entertain the client thing. You know, families are less likely to come during these days. And, you know, I have had CEOs of NBA teams tell me when they get that first scheduled draft in July or whenever they get it, and they see those blocks on Monday night, they just, you know, they hit their head on the desk, right? Because, like, that's a revenue killer. On top of that, you've got the NFL. So I would love to see the NBA dark on Mondays. Because, hell, half the season, it's football owns Monday night anyway, and at least in the United States. And so... Why? And it's a revenue killer. So let's get rid of it. If we're going to shorten games, don't take them off Fridays and Saturdays and Sundays. Take them off Mondays and Tuesdays. So I'm with you there. I would love to see the league dark on Mondays. And then a team, to me, would have a weekday game and a weekend game, because you need to stagger them a little bit, because, you know, maybe different cities might have different habits, because you do need, you know, I think the new league likes that doubleheader on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, and then a national game or Saturday or Sunday. So, I mean, I think you do need that frequency in order to satisfy the national contract, which is 38% to 40% of your revenue. But I'm with you. Like, let's just make the league dark on Monday. Stupid night. Football owns it. Bad revenue. Kids are at school. Nobody cares on them. Nobody needs to go downtown on a Monday night.
Really appreciate it. This will be fun to watch. And if the NBA does it, I think the NHL won't be far behind, because a lot of the leagues are starting to see a significant diminishing of people going to games, no question about it. A lot of that has to do with the price of tickets and food and everything else at the facility, at least in Canada for hockey. So, Kevin, it'll be an ongoing story. We appreciate your time.
Hey, thanks for having me.